Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Winning the Room, Public Speaking Skills for Unforgettable Storytelling by Jonathan Pease, narrated by Grant Cartwright. Preface. Being an excellent public speaker is often thought of, or even dismissed, as a talent people either have or don't have, and as a person writing a book on the topic, you may think I must be one of the blessed few. I want to make my position clear. The ability to public speak in an engaging way that connects with your audience as intended is a skill that anyone can develop and master. I know this is true firsthand because I avoided public speaking for almost half my life until I made it my mission to figure it out. Like most people who figure something out and create a method, this came from a place of pain. If you're wondering if you'll ever overcome your challenges in this space, I hope my early predicaments and fears will resonate with my journey, giving you confidence as you continue listening. To take it a step further, and on a more positive and less fear-based note, I also want you to listen, feeling inspired by how transformational and truly excellent public speaking can be. As a child, I had a lot of learning and behavioral issues. If I were a young person today, I would probably be considered neurodivergent, but I was just classified as difficult back then. I struggled with focus and basic concepts, and I have never spoken about this before, but I also silently struggled with a stutter. There are a few different types of stutters or disfluency. For me, it presented as mental blocks on words. I would be mid-sentence, everything feeling normal, and then one word would get caught in my throat, or mind, or both. I couldn't get the word to come out. This mental block quickly became physical, and as I tried to force the term to come out, the physiological response would leave me looking as though I was having a spasm. I was hugely embarrassed by these moments. They made me feel dumb and inferior. I dreaded them happening, making the moments worse and more regular. These days, I can recognize someone with a stutter a mile off before I even hear them get stuck on a word. When I see others displaying this kind of behavior, I cringe and get feelings of anxiety and embarrassment. Weirdly, I was social and chatty in everyday life. My parents and teachers always said I had the gift of the gab. The problem was that the words would stop flowing as soon as I felt any pressure. I'd get stuck on specific terms and often end up in deafening silence. That would result in the people around me noticing, staring, or at least it felt that way, and me burning with more embarrassment. Like any difficulty holding you back, you learn to create workarounds or find ways to mask it. So I avoided any moments where I might have to speak in public, and for someone who loved to be the center of attention, this was acutely painful. Or, failing that, resort to things like faking a cough or physical pain, like rubbing my sore hand. I became a master of misdirection. I would try almost anything to take the attention away from me in those moments. But either way, I would still get furious at myself. I am a highly competitive person, so the idea of sabotaging myself was annoying. It's like kicking an own goal. It wasn't until my early 20s that I realized I could no longer work around these limitations. Instead, I needed to train myself to get over them and thrive. Fast forward to my first corporate job. I was working in the advertising industry in New York, where everyone is meant to be a fabulous storyteller. In my experience, Americans are born orators. I was too embarrassed even to hint I didn't have this skill, let alone admit I still panicked at the thought of it. I would usually call in sick if I had to present to a client, or even in an internal meeting. If that weren't an option, I'd maneuver the situation to ensure others would present. I was junior enough that it didn't materially matter. I wouldn't be that missed. Someone else would always pick up the slack and present on my behalf, but I was indeed missing opportunities. I had a niggling voice telling me I needed to stop being like this, but I needed more time to solve this issue. Maybe next week, maybe next year. Like a mirror to my delinquency in this area, my boss at the time was a natural, always pitching with ease and excellence. But for me, sleepless nights, significant anxiety, public humiliation, and too many forced sick days were my ongoing reality. I couldn't get past the question, what is wrong with me and right with him? It felt like a glitch in the matrix. I was never aware of his special training, but as good as he was still obsessed with mastering the craft of presenting rather than relying on natural abilities or winging it. His relentless rehearsals pre-pitch and brutal feedback sessions post-pitch were legendary. My observations and endless notes about how he seemed to do with ease and grace, something I couldn't figure out myself, were the first seeds that grew into this book. The second catalyst also came from my time in New York at this job. I already knew from my direct boss that great pitching could sell ideas to clients, and that I needed to get better at it to avoid career limitations and personal embarrassment. Still, I hadn't yet realized the broader power it could have on human behavior and success. This lesson came after I heard the abrupt news that my ultimate boss and mentor at BBDO New York, Phil Dusenbury, was leaving the business. I still remember the all-staff email in March 2002, like it was yesterday. I can't communicate how much he meant to me and what a big deal his departure was. Phil was irreplaceable to me. Along with fashion designer Diane von Furstenberg, he dragged me into the industry. He believed in me and gave me my shot. He even gifted me his high-powered immigration lawyer to help secure a working visa, which in those days was incredibly hard to come by. We were called to an uptown venue on the day of Phil's departure to hear from Phil, but mainly to meet his replacement, who was flying in from London for the occasion. As I walked up Sixth Avenue on that cold, crisp morning with a bunch of my colleagues, I recall all of us being distinctly somber. Many people in the company shared my sentiment about this transitional moment for the agency. We were not feeling receptive to the guy stepping in. He was about to address a tough crowd. Like good corporate citizens, we turned up and shuffled into the large auditorium. There were over 1,500 people jammed in, and it was standing room only. We all milled around, waiting, muttering grumpily, until eventually the room fell quiet. Phil said a few humble and, as always, enlightened words, and then stepped back to welcome his replacement to the stage. He spoke to us for at most 8 minutes. In that short time, he converted everyone, from a doubter to a believer, from an adversary to a loyal teammate, in 8 minutes. It blew me away. I couldn't fathom the power of one great speech. It was transformational. He had us all joining him as allies on this new journey for him and BBDO. It was right there at that moment that I realized I was on a burning platform. I had to fix this now and make public speaking a part of my life. I needed to overcome this self-imposed limitation where I'd told myself that I couldn't public speak and didn't need to public speak to get ahead in life. I would become someone who could turn up and present effectively. I immediately threw myself at the problem and madly researched the world's best courses and best presenters. I was flush with great options. Over the next few years, I attended courses in New York, LA, Toronto, London, and Sydney. I even expanded to vocal classes, opera singing classes, acting coaching, NLP training, and the communications course at the Church of Scientology. That was an eye-opener. Whilst I learned much theory and got a broader understanding of the subject matter, I needed tangible things to put into practice. Feeling underwhelmed, I collected what I liked from all those courses and started my curation journey. I watched hours and hours of public speakers I loved. Some were my original bosses at BBDO, from Grammy winners to cult gurus, business mavericks, charismatic street performers, and iconic world leaders. I wrote down all the practical tips I could find, observe, and extract. I then started practicing them myself. By this stage in my career, I was pitching to clients semi-regularly, and it was a fantastic testing ground. At first, I practiced with my colleagues, and as I became more senior, I trained my teams with the tools I was gathering. I eventually started working with clients, organizations, and leaders in the public eye. All types of people from all walks of life. These learnings evolved into what has today become my Winning the Room course and methodology. I no longer work purely in advertising, and I'm not a full-time public speaking coach either. Chief Creative Officer is my day job, and I love so many aspects of that gig. I also love making films, investing in startups, and many other passions. But the thing I love the most is pitching. I get my absolute satisfaction, my juice, from those precious moments in the room, presenting my guts out. It's still hard to believe something that started as a deficit has become my obsession. So, if you're currently working with a stutter, nerves, or any other difficulties, I feel you. It's a silent and slow nightmare. I want to give you hope that you can get over it. It came down to pausing, breath control, and the eventual confidence that grew and grew as I started to get the better of it. It's a theme you'll be hearing more about in this book, but I can't stress it enough. Practice, practice, and more practice. To this day, I consciously find ways to decrease the pressure and use a few strategies to manage it. I'll explain the main techniques that work for me in this book, and for the thousands of people I've coached. You might think I'm laboring the point, but if I can go from someone who used to be on the verge of faking his death to get out of presenting, to someone who pitches for a living, whose career hinges on their ability to win rooms, so can you. The more I learn about public speaking, the more I enjoy it. Like most things in life, the more you can enjoy something, the better you will get at it. And the better you get, the more you will enjoy it. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I hope that after you've listened to this book, you take steps to find joy in presenting too. Introduction. Everyone, whether we realize it or not, relies on public speaking daily. In simple terms, when you talk to anyone outside of the comfort of your head, you're public speaking. This book is designed for everyone, not just keynote speakers, storytellers, and deal makers. If you want to bring even one person along with you and your ideas, you need to learn the art and science of public speaking. Before we roll into the content, though, let's quickly talk about the title of this book and method. Winning the room. The notion of winning can be a polarizing term in our culture. At its worst, it implies a sense that one is selfish and uncollaborative. I believe that when we win in public speaking, and arguably in business or life, we can connect with others around an idea and create something new, powerful, and meaningful together. Winning the room in this context means achieving the objectives we set out to accomplish with what we are saying. For people to believe, invest, or follow you, whether at a new job interview, a speech at your best friend's wedding, or a pitch to investors. In various areas of life, we all need to make our points, telling our engaging stories to the largest possible audience and be remembered. My belief, which has become more of a certainty with the experience I've gained, is that we need to engage with other people to achieve great things. If you have a brilliant idea, you can take it a long way alone. But to get to great, we must learn to unlock the power of the collective. Getting other people to come on the journey with you is exhilarating. It's fun and gets you somewhere much more exciting than you could ever have traveled alone. You'll notice I use the words indelible and attention often in this book. We live in the attention age, so we're all playing the attention game, whether we like it or not. It's a game where the people who get and hold attention win. Earning and maintaining attention and then making your pitch indelible is the act of putting an idea into the minds of your audience that's impossible to forget. Through the techniques in this book, you'll be able to create a deep connection with the audience, which means that when they recall your interaction or idea, it's a positive memory. And when that happens, there are no losers. It's a win-win. Back to storytelling as a human trait. Despite the involuntary wince most people have in reaction to these words, public speaking is your birthright as a human. Our species evolved through telling stories to one another. Centuries ago, we gathered around the fire, sharing experiences and making myths. And these days, we watch tiny digital screens with the same intention, to feel a connection and a sense of belonging. You don't need to be an expert in evolutionary psychology to excel in public speaking, but let's start by accepting that our abilities to tell stories and to connect around ideas have enabled humans to survive and thrive over millennia. Storytelling and idea sharing were once skills everyone held in common. But somewhere along the way, many of us lost these talents or began to think of them as jobs other people did. Your existence proves that your ancestors were great at working collectively using the power of ideas. From bartering to banter, standing in front of another person and using words to persuade, engage, and even charm them is an essential part of what makes us human. And as technology, automation, and machine learning make inroads into more and more areas of our lives, being uniquely human will become ever more vital. If public speaking is something you struggle to do, it's not that you've somehow evolved away from this capability. It's only that you've lost the belief that you can do it. Remind yourself, you are as capable of sharing your ideas as any other individual on this planet. All you need are proven techniques and strategies to help you win any room you walk into, which this book aims to do for you. In today's world, it's easier to let other people or things do the talking. Send an email, a quick text or DM, or chat to a chatbot, and harder to be heard. Far from communicating predominantly with the local village, these days we are now inundated with information and ideas from all over the world. Media, social media, politics, and advertising. Even on an individual level, everyone is a content hub, and we're consuming their stories across every platform. There is noise everywhere, and it's overwhelming just thinking about it. Consider this. While we go about our days being targeted with all these messages, forcing our brains to filter out 99% of the noise, our success in work and life relies on others taking notice of our messages. Therefore, the difference between success and failure comes down to figuring out, how does your story become part of the 1% of noises others hear and act on? When you break it down, the goal of any storytelling or public speaking moment is to cut through the noise and capture your audience's increasingly short attention spans so they engage with and buy into your message. This is the fundamental premise behind winning the room. Even if you have a solid and vital message, whether you achieve this goal, in other words, if anyone cares about it or not, ultimately comes down to how you are in the way you speak with your audience. Can you forge a genuine connection and bring them on the journey with you? The concepts of cut-through and authenticity are the cringeworthy marketing buzzwords du jour. Still, I'm ready to defend them, especially authenticity, at least in its purest form, as the holy grail of public speaking. That said, I think merely striving to cut through and be authentic oversimplifies the task at hand and lands us in the space of ripe for mocking self-help gurus on social media. I'm striving for far more practicality here. Everything we're about to go through is immediately actionable. That's my number one priority in this book. My number two priority is to ensure that everything has been road tested. All the ideas and tips in this book have been used by me, my teams, and my clients. Nothing is in here because it sounds smart or is theoretically good, or I've read it in a book by someone I respect. I have combed through a mountain of material and tried out a bunch of techniques, and only the best of the best made it into this book. I see myself as a curator who has pulled together the absolute best public speaking tips, techniques, and fundamentals. I've thoroughly road-tested them, as have my teams and coaching clients. I've been pitching an idea a day, roughly speaking, for 20 years. I haven't bothered doing the math, but it's a lot of pitching. During that time, I've slowly figured out what works and what doesn't. I get so much joy from seeing the people I work with change and improve. I've facilitated hundreds of Winning the Room workshops with thousands of participants and witnessed remarkable transformations over the years. Most people I work with already have great ideas, but they often fall short when bringing others along for the ride with them. I've seen people go from not believing they had much to offer to becoming creative leaders, business leaders, and community leaders purely based on the way they learned to communicate their ideas. People don't just gain a new skill set. More than that, they access a whole new dimension in both their working and personal lives. I've written this book to make this material easy to grasp and use. As part of that process, I created a methodology called CLAIM, which stands for confident, likable, authentic, influential, and memorable. Your audience must believe you have these five attributes if you want you and your ideas to be persuasive and unforgettable. Moreover, you need to believe you have these attributes too. The content itself is not genius, and the book shouldn't be challenging. When broken down, the genius is that it's brilliantly simple. What you're about to hear in this book works. None of this stuff is purely theoretical. It's actionable. It's road-tested. It's meant for everyone. It's easy to grasp. And most importantly, it'll make a difference in your life. And I want to be clear, though I reference advertising a lot due to my background, I'm not only talking about advertising pitches. These techniques can help you win any room, however large or small. I fully understand that most people listening to this book will be short on time. We all are these days. As a result, I've attempted to write this book with three modalities in mind. Modality one is for the seriously time poor. I invite you to listen to the section introductions. There are five of them, and the first piece in each chapter. It's the first paragraph or two before the section break in each chapter. This exercise will take you no more than 1 hour in total. I believe this alone will make you think differently about public speaking and at least bring your awareness to the things you could work on in the future to lift your game. You don't know what you don't know. Modality two is for people who want to invest more time from the get-go, or maybe after you've done modality one and are now ready to dive deeper. For you, the instructions are straightforward. Listen to the book from beginning to end, as you have time, and find opportunities in your everyday, personal, and professional world to apply what you learn and keep building on your skills. This experience is as close to doing a Winning the Room workshop with me, IRL, as I could put on paper. I know from hundreds of workshops that this will elevate your public speaking performance and give you an edge in work and life. Modality three is for people who want to come on the journey and transform how they communicate in public. For you, my favorite type of people, complete modality two, ideally within a short period so you can best connect and consolidate the learnings, and then join the Winning Room community at winningtherooms.com. It's a place where I continue to develop core and specialized courses and work with the group to improve their skills and prepare for specific presentations. Public speaking is my obsession, and I get joy from working with people on their presentations. Becoming great at pitching requires many skills, rehearsing, and above all, time. And the best way for me to support you on that journey is through an ongoing relationship, a situation where we can share learnings for months, if not years. Working alone, we often lack the discipline to push ourselves. Pitching alone, you never get to rehearse properly or receive honest feedback. Whether you want to structure more memorable pitch stories, grow your confidence, influence your audience, or all of the above, the Winning the Room community provides the accountability and push you need to achieve your potential and win more pitches. I'm not a futurist, but I am inspired by what is coming next. As technology makes inroads into more and more areas of our lives, being uniquely human and able to connect with other humans is becoming ever more vital. Just getting the information out is not enough. Computers can already do that faster and better than you. The only X factor you have left is the ability to make it emotive and honest and, in the process, make a real connection. Public speaking is fundamentally about human connection, so public speaking skills will only get more valuable. As we automate and robotize everything, your ability to tell your story and pitch live in the moment will be crucial to your success. Being a great public speaker should be your top priority for your ongoing relevance and maybe even your continuing employment and enjoyment in life. Considering you bought this book, you may already agree. In Memoriam. Phil Dusenbury was an industry giant who gave me more of his precious time than I deserved. Phil passed away just after Christmas in 2007. I'll always be hugely grateful for his mentorship, creative guidance, and support. Confident. Section 1. Hold it too tight and you'll crush it. Hold it too loose and it'll fly away. I start with confident because while all the content in this book is interrelated, confidence is the bedrock and underpins everything else. All the tips, techniques, and other elements either contribute to or are enhanced by confidence, or conversely, are completely undermined and let down by a lack of it. Confidence in the context of public speaking is twofold. There's the internal element of how you feel as the presenter, which is probably what you're used to focusing on when you think of confidence. Then there is the external element, how the audience perceives you. Regardless of how you feel, do they think you are confident and therefore to be believed and followed? Confidence is an unusual thing. When you've got it, you can't understand why other people don't have it. And when you don't have it, it's hard to imagine how you'll ever get any. The content in this section will help you cultivate confidence internally, as well as help you do things that will express confidence externally. There's a nice positive loop here too, because feeling confident will help you seem confident, and acting confident will help you feel more confident. Confidence is critical because in the public speaking game, your audience is more likely to pay attention to you and believe your message when you're confident and perceived as confident. They'll probably believe you if you're confident, and if you're not, they probably won't. It's that simple. Try to think of a great public speaker, thought leader, or community elder who doesn't project confidence when they present. I bet you can't. It makes sense. Why would anyone want to follow you if you're not confident about where you're going? From an individual perspective, we were born confident. All of us were once supremely, unshakably confident. When our chubby toddler fists reached for an object or when we demanded attention, it never entered our minds to wonder if we would be listened to or understood. We may never be able to return to that state of pure ego, and that's probably an excellent thing, but we can use the tips and techniques I've tested over the years and gathered in this book to make what was once our first nature become second nature. Confidence can feel precarious because it can be unraveled so quickly. Nothing undermines confidence like someone telling you to just be more confident. Hold it too tightly and you can crush it, too loosely and it slips through your fingers. Relying on tangible tips rather than winging it with a vibe is like an insurance policy for maintaining confidence in the best and worst times. Most star performers, sportspeople, and public speakers will admit they have a sneaking fear that one day they'll choke, get the yips, freeze, or lose their mojo when they need it most. We often think of confidence in almost supernatural terms. It's why performers often have rituals or superstitions to ward off an attack of performance anxiety. Many celebrities have quirky pre-show routines, from Tony Robbins' power posing and screaming sequence to Rihanna, who famously has a shot of liquor before a gig to help overcome her stage fright. The scrutiny and expectations surrounding a performer at the top of their game are incredibly daunting, but you don't need to aim for that kind of perfection. I'll discuss keeping things a little loose later in this book. You need to be self-possessed enough to know that you can stand up in front of your chosen audience and give it your best shot without fearing falling flat on your face. It's another reason faking it till you make it won't cut it. Without a solid foundation of confidence, even if you manage to wing it for a while, one of these days you'll hit a bump in the road. Something will throw you off and you'll find yourself having that deer in the headlights moment that is so painful to witness and worse to experience. There are simple techniques and skills to help you build and practice confidence, making it feel more predictable, achievable, and less fragile. The kind of confidence that wins the room and inspires people to invest in your ideas can't be artificial. It needs to be authentic and grounded in genuine self-belief. An internal conviction results in outward confidence. The first person you need to convince is yourself. Feeling confident will free you up to engage with your listener, and when your audience thinks you ooze confidence, they will position you as a subject matter expert. People want to engage with and buy from confident people. Your audience is smart enough to know when someone is faking it. We might be sophisticated urban
Sample complete. Ready to continue?